Hibas.
There it is.
A quick night at the office. Got the clinch. Got the judo hip throw. Threw it down. Got the armbar.
Oh, that's it. That left hand. He was waiting.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
And with the legend George St. Pierre in his corner, Nasrat Haqparast delivers in a big way tonight.
Brought that from behind his knee.
Look at that, Joe. He dips and just throws the right hook. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it doesn't get any cleaner than that.
Just keep climbing and getting that title shot. That's what I'm here for, to be the best and get that championship strap back.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. Please tell me that's on video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous. Listen to me. We're out of here.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. Once again, Matt is out. Whenever I was out doing something that I wasn't put my parents would always say I was out gallivanting. Matt is gallivanting all over Abu Dhabi with Dana and Dean Thomas, and he's got a nice... I'm jealous, though, because he gets like a nice week and a half vacation in a hotel suite. That's a pretty fun life.
It is a pretty fun life. It's funny. When you said gallivanting, I just pictured him and Dean Thomas holding hands and skipping down the streets of Abu Dhabi. But that's just a weird visual.
That's very accurate. That's exactly what they do. That is what they do. They gallivant. They hold hands and they gallivant. So thank you, Phoenix. We have a good show today. Amanda Hibas. She might have been on once before. My memory is non-existent. Nasrat Haqparast is on, and we also have Cody Garbrandt, which would be good to catch up with him and see what his plans are, because it's been a while since we've had him on.
I'm so impressed by how you said Nasrat's last name with such a flow, and I was struggling.
Oh, were you? Yeah, I mean, in the UFC, you have so many different fighters from so many different countries, and each country has a certain way of pronouncing. So it's very difficult to learn all the pronunciations. Once you know it, you know it.
Yeah.
But I mean, who didn't take at least 2 years to get Ioane Jędrzejczyk's name? I mean, they actually did a video where people were going around trying to say it. You know, the combination of letters in a lot of names that you see in the UFC, you're just not used to seeing on it because you don't see them growing up. And so they're not common for you.
It seriously looks like your last bowl of alphabet soup sometimes. You're like, what is it? Like, it took me Magomed Sharipov. I was so proud of myself when I got that one smooth. I was like, yes, yes.
Yeah, well, Nurmagomedov is not the easiest. And the first couple of times you tried to say it, and who didn't say Khabib instead of Habib for a love?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, and then here's the problem. You'll hear Bruce Buffer says it one way, and then you'll hear, Paul Felder say it one way. And then you'll hear Joe say it one. So it's like everyone sounds like they know what they're talking about. And they all have a slightly different. So sometimes you just don't know.
Because Felder's from Philly and then Rogan's from Boston. And, so I always ask the fighter when I was doing commentary, I would have them, I would make them record their name and try to break it down. It's actually, I give Anik so much credit, the homework that he does and the things that he does. And it's definitely, it's fun. They're fun jobs, but they're hard jobs.
They're very hard jobs. And John Anik is great. And I also give a lot of credit to Buffer. Bruce Buffer is usually the one I'll defer to if I have to pick someone's pronunciation. It's like, which one will I, because I haven't heard the fighter say it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Bruce is saying it right in front of the fighter, and I never see them going, who? Like, if you ever see a fighter look at Bruce and go, what the fuck are you talking? Then you'll know. But Bruce Buffer is the one I kind of figure, okay, Bruce is probably saying it correctly.
What a weekend.
Incredible.
A freaking weekend. I where do we start, Jim?
I mean, watching Ponzinibbio, I mean, no one predicted. I'm not surprised that Lee Zhiliang beat him, but I'm surprised he knocked him out in the first round. I mean, no one saw that coming. I don't know who his favorite in that fight, but what a terrible thing for Ponzinibbio in his first fight back.
Ponzinibbio was favored. If you were a person who bet on the underdogs for some parts of that card, you were a very happy person at the end of the night. I mean, one of Lee's one of the things that impressed me so much about Lee is he threw the right and slipped his head out of line so that when he moved in for the hook, it was 100% perfect. I mean, I feel bad for Ponzinibbio because of everything that he's gone through to get back. And then that's how he gets back. But Lee's stock certainly rose for sure.
Yeah, he was, there's no way I could have, I hate picking fights anyway. But to have picked that, I would never have picked Alessio De Chirico knocking out Joaquin
Buckley. Yeah.
With that beautiful head kick. I mean, I never would have seen that. It's crazy too, because the prelims were all unanimous decision, split decision. They were all decisions. And then, man, as soon as you get to the, it's all fucking TKOs, except for the main event, which is one of the best fights I've ever seen.
It's ABC, right? It's on ABC, and it happens to be a lot of knockouts via striking. And we know ABC's history with boxing, and arguably the best boxer in the UFC, we could say right now, is Max Holloway, pulls off a main event like that. So I'm sure everybody at ABC was happy. Everybody at the UFC was happy. And I'm so curious just to see how things went fight week with ABC being part of it. And then with the whole time change things for the fighters, you know, it is 10 p.m. for them in Abu Dhabi. And then the difference of how they've had to fight previously, we're doing at night for us. So I wonder how that worked for everybody.
Now, you would know, but I'm too lazy to do the math. I'm thinking it's crazy that such a one-sided main event, and it was a complete domination by Holloway, but it was still a great fight because Cater is so tough, and Cater was landing his own punches. And it wasn't for lack of effort. I mean, he just, you know, Max was just as good as he's ever looked. 50-42, 50-43. That is at least, that's a couple of judges giving 2 10-8 rounds and one judge giving 3 10-8 rounds. Am I doing that math correctly?
I thought it was all 8. I thought it all was all 10-8s.
Well, no, it's 50-43, 50-43, and 50-42.
Okay. So you're right then.
I think it's 2 10-8s and then 3 for the one judge. Yeah, because I think if it was all 5, it would have been 50-40.
40. But it's just the stats alone with Max and his volume. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I wonder, I mean, just looking at his career at this point, I give Max all the credit in the world, but there was a second I sat back and was like, well, how good is Dustin Poirier? Because if you look back at the Holloway fight and the Dustin Poirier fight and the matchup and the way both of those two fight, I mean, yeah, I know Max did go up.
Yeah.
It's just still gets me more excited for Poirier-Connor.
It is interesting. How much did going up hurt him, though? What was it a matter of going up? And the Volkanovski fights, you know, I felt terrible for, I thought absolutely Max won that last fight. I'm going by my memory of the emotion, but I remember thinking Max should have got the nod in the first one, but maybe I'm wrong about that. I should rewatch that first fight. But in the second one, I absolutely thought Holloway won that fight. And I think he's definitely the best featherweight in the world. I don't think there's anyone better in that weight. And he will absolutely be fighting for the belt again. He has to. He absolutely has to, although maybe not against, would it be against Volkanovski? I don't know. I don't know if they want a third matchup.
I don't think anybody would be mad at a third matchup, but I feel like we are excited to see what Ortega can do with Volkanovski now that we have this new resurrected Ortega, because he was so impressive. And I still, him against Max, you know, you still, there was such a divide with that first fight that we don't know if that's, they're even close to the same level, even though Ortega has elevated to such a level. There's still so many questions there. But what impressed me most about Max was his intention. It was like, okay, the belt, not the belt, but my intention is to have these amazing fights, and that's part of my legacy. So I don't, you know, we just see Max Holloway on a card and we get excited. I feel like that's a big part of what his legacy is now.
And when something like this happens, like when UFC does a free TV, I'm always happy for the organization when it's this good, when every fight, because I know that non-fight fans are watching this, or guys who are just kind of, hey, let me see what UFC is. And there's no way you can't get hooked watching this many TKOs and watching a main event like that. Just it's impossible to not get into the sport. So I was happy. It was an amazing night. And Holloway, he's never looked better. It's crazy how he's never looked better than he did on Saturday night.
Well, I just found out we have somebody who is on the rise in the waiting room.
Yes, let's bring her in. Amanda Ribas is fighting Marina Rodriguez this Saturday. Saturday, January 23rd. We have a card this Wednesday. It is this Saturday is the 23rd, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I am correct. This Saturday, Wednesday is the
Wednesday's Neil Magny.
Kiesa, yeah, yeah.
Kiesa, and then the 23rd is
Conor Poirier. Yeah.
See, yep. 257.
Hi, Amanda. How are you?
Hello, I'm good.
So you're in Abu Dhabi now?
Yes.
And have you been before? You've been. This is not your first time in Fight Island.
No. I fought the last time here against Paige VanZant. Was the Masvidal card was amazing.
I have to ask you, Amanda. Have you stayed away from the amazing chocolates that are in your room? And how have you done
goodness.
It?
Oh my goodness. It's hard, but sometimes I look at my Nutella here. I don't know if you're seeing. I always bring with me because I need to put some small piece. You can see like that before I go to take my rest of my, like cut my weight. I put a little bit in my mouth and me. Yes, now I can go.
Doesn't that make it harder though? Like, if I'm trying to do something with weight, lose weight, like if I taste it, it sends me on a bender. How do you just eat a little bit? Doesn't that, I would think that would make it harder.
It's because it's glycose. In Portuguese, we say glicose. When you put this in your mouth, it's like a little sugar. So you have fast energy. So this fast energy, I make me do exercise or make me sweaty.
Yeah. And the fact that I'm comparing my elliptical workout to a world-class athlete and asking how you do it is, I really, you should hit me for that. That was a stupid question.
Amanda, your laugh and your personality is so infectious, you know, and it's really high and energetic. I know that you have a family full of fighters. What makes you this way? Where does this sort of like fun, energetic personality come from?
I think my dad is a little bit like that too, but he's a little crazy. But I was not like that when I think I was 14, 13. God, I was really annoying. But I started to live alone in a big city in Brazil to do judo. So I lived with a lot of persons, people, fighters, and we learn that sometimes it's not good if you are bad or if you are mad or if you are sad. If you are still like that, the things just go worse. So if I'm feeling pain on my finger, I will complain at you. Will happen? How will you get better if I just complain? No, put ice. Put ice. Yes, the ice is good. You are like cold, but no, it's good.
I think understandable.
When you do that, I think when you do that, their life is better. So I learned.
You do have an amazing energy. Like, are you a person like, are you good at concentrating, or are you like always have to be moving?
Sometimes when the coach they try to show me some techniques, and if it's a long technique, I catch me look to the air. And the coach is, Amandinha. Oh, minha querida. Because they start to run. And me, okay. I learned.
So it's about keeping that focus. Keeping that focus. You know, it's got to be hard, especially when you have to keep focus for a fight. And you've had so many different change-ups in the last couple of months and then leading to this fight. So how has that been for you?
It was crazy because I supposed to fight, first of all, against Carla Esparza. And then she said, need more time. And me, okay. And they still training. And then the fight was for this year. and change opponent. So for Carlos Sparks, I was training really striking and wrestling defense, the rest to takedowns. And then I changed to Michelle Waterson, big fight too, supposed to fight against her, big fight. And I still training wrestling and striking, but takedowns to wrestling and get out to the kicks. And then change it again. And I still training wrestling, takedowns, doing takedowns, try to get up to try to get out to kicks. And now get out the elbows and really good Muay Thai. So I think the all camp was one getting better to another one. So they complete themselves. So for me, I think now I'm more complete athlete.
Yeah, and Rodriguez is coming off a first loss to Esparza. And she's had two majority draws in the UFC so far. So she goes the distance, except for the Contender Series win. It seems like every fight in the UFC, she's gone the distance. So you expecting more of a patient approach from her, or what are you expecting from her?
I expect then a really tough girl, because I know she is not just a fighter, because there is some fighter when they lost, they are like head down and, ooh, I don't want this anymore. But she's a warrior. So I think she wants to win to me. So I'm prepared for the best version of Marina ever. So I know she will try to kick me really hard. She will try to knock me down. So I am going to this fight really prepared.
Yeah, well, she's coming off that first loss. It's always interesting to see how somebody responds. And your only loss was it was obviously a slip, and you were getting back up against Pollyanna Viana. Would you look at that and go, like, you know, that was kind of what cost you the fight, was that slip? It was just one of those crazy things that happens.
No, I think that what cost the fight was Pollyanna was really focused in the strike. When she saw my what the name is?
Chin, yeah.
When she saw my chin open, and she just threw, boom, and she finding my chin, and I knock it down. And that fight, I learned how sometimes we need to push to the ground, not just stand up. And I learned it.
You seem like, with your personality and with your energy, like, you know, of course a loss is hard to take, but you seem like somebody who would rebound from something like that with the right attitude. Was it something really hard for you to come back from, or were you able just to kind of shrug it off and go, all right, you know, she found my chin and that's it?
Yeah. I don't like it that taste the loss of fight. You know, I don't like, I have my tape until today to that fight. I have, because I need to remember, because I don't like that taste. So for me, I lost in Saturday. Monday was training, and my dad said, he never see me on the fire in my eyes like that, because I want to get better after that fight. And I saw that fight sometimes, and I saw my fight in my last fight, and I can see a big difference between me in that time and now. So for me, it's a pleasure to see this, because it's my work, so it's good.
Amanda, I really like listening to you. Jim and we have interviewed so many people over the years, and I can tell somebody who's not just a fighter, but like a real martial artist who takes pride in adding things to their arsenal. So I think that is super cool. And the other thing is, I think you kind of have your head pretty well in the game. And I was listening to you in interviews saying that you want to steal the show on Saturday, that you know it's Dustin and Connor, and you know you're on that card, but you want to make a name for yourself too. So tell me about being a star, and what does that mean to you in your MMA career?
UFC doesn't want just a champ. They want a champ with the public want to see. Because imagine, who is the champ of this category? I don't know. I don't want to be like that. I want to people know me, and they know who is the champ. So for me, being star is together with be a good fighter. They need to walk together. And fighting this card is a huge opportunity that UFC give to me. They give it in my last fight because I fought in the card the Masvidal was a big opportunity, and now this opportunity too. So I will try to grab with my hands, my arms to do a big show so the public can see me, see my fight and like my fight, like me and my sponsors too. Hey, I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm not just one fighter. I can say, I can talk, I can fight, I can sell. So this I want to do.
Right. I can sell. Yes, I can sell. Yeah. It's really important because you have to be yourself, but it is about getting people to watch the fights. And sometimes if people love somebody or if people have strong feelings against them, they'll pay to watch them fight. I mean, that's
yes.
A lot of people hate Conor, but it doesn't matter. They'll pay to watch Conor because they want to see him lose, or they'll pay to see him because they want to see him win. It doesn't matter. They're still paying.
In the beginning, I didn't like Conor. Yes, I was too. Punch his face because he talked so much about Brazil, about Jose Aldo.
Yeah.
So when me, oh my goodness, I hate this guy. But after the fight, he said, oh, he's a hero. He's a big guy. And we saw he's just to sell the fight. And he's not a bad person. So after that, I said, yes, he's a smart fighter. So this is good.
I'm kind of the same way with Conor, although I didn't like him after the Aldo, because I love Jose Aldo, and I flew to Vegas for that fight, and it was 13 seconds. So, I was not pleased with that at all. But I liked Conor after he lost to Nate. When I saw how he handled the loss, I respected him a lot. Like, he's a true fighter's mentality, and he gave it up to Nate Diaz. And that really made me like Conor, was after that loss to Diaz, I saw how he handled it. And I'm like, no, I really like this guy now.
Yeah, he's nice.
And, you know, part of being a star is having those sort of amazing fights that people, their minds blown, sort of like what Holloway did this weekend. I know that you were interested in showcasing a little bit more of what you have in your toolbox with the striking. Can we expect to see more striking on Saturday?
I hope so, because I think this fight against Marina, She has a really good strike. She's from Muay Thai. Mm-hmm. So for me, if I can show my strike against her, we'll be really great because she's good on that. And I'm not just judo girl. I am AA fighter. So I want to show that.
Yeah. Well, you're really, everyone is happy that you're back, and everyone is happy that you're fighting, and you're the first fight on the main card this Saturday.
Yeah, I'm so excited for that. Really, really, really.
And there's going to be fans there. Yes, and fans are going to be there.
And fans.
Are you happy about that the fans are starting to come back in?
Yeah, imagine that. I fought in the first UFC without public, without audience in Brasilia. And then I fought here the first time in the UFC Fight Island. And now was not the first time with second. Audience, but it's the second time. Third time with the audience. Yeah. So I'm feeling like, oh my goodness, I fought in everything. So it's good. It's good. I'm trying to remember how is it, the pool, the audience making noises. But it will be great. I did some interview for reporters from here. And they said to me they will be there. And I say to them, wait, clap the hands with me because I want to listen. And they said they will.
You like the energy of the crowd. It really does something for you. Yeah.
I like when they scream for me. I like when they scream for another one. I don't care. I like the scream.
It's funny because the Paige VanZant fight was so interesting. Like, people did think that you were going to win, but they didn't think you would win so easily. And I felt like that was one of the things that was really impressive. And then I thought, was it on your Instagram? Did you guys actually train together afterwards?
This is crazy because my last camp, I did to fight against Paige. And now in this camp, she helped me. And it was so funny because I was in America top team and I was in the end of my train and she came in me, oh my goodness, how this will be? Because I never talked to her. And I was imagining my mind, I don't know, maybe she grabbed a bottle and throw in my head.
And obviously you're focused now on only on Marina Rodriguez. But if it goes your way on Saturday and you get the win, you must be thinking of a possible next fight. Not that you're looking past this fight, but just strategically, is there anybody who you think, well, maybe if this works out next, would it be a Sparza or who are you looking at that you think would be a good match for you if this goes well?
Yes, I think if I do a really good fight against Marina and go to my arms to the top. But really good fight, I think I can go to top five and fight against someone there. I hope Sparza. Sparza! Hey, don't go to the belt until fight with me. I want to fight with you before that. Because
what is it about Sparza? What is it about her that you want to match up?
It's because I saw in some interviews she's supposed to fight for the belt sometime. So I don't know what they put her name there. And I want that too. I want to fight against her because I think it's a huge name for me. She is top four, I think. And this will be good. But everything depends to this fight against Marina. She's number 8.
Yeah.
So it's big fight for me.
Yeah. Sparza, when you look at the top, Wiley Zhang is fighting Rose, and mm-hmm. Rose has beaten Joanna twice. So if Rose wins the belt, would they put Jędrzejczyk against her right away? Probably not, because they've already fought twice. But if Wiley wins, then maybe her and you want to have a rematch, because that was such, I mean, an incredible first fight they had. So I guess it depends on who wins the belt too.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
There's just a lot of fun matchups now in that division, you know, and I was around when women weren't in the UFC. So just to see that like, not only are we here, but we're killing it. And there's just so many good fights and so many good matchups. I just love having these conversations. So thanks, Amanda, for being a part of that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's fun to make up fights you want to see, and hopefully they have. And hopefully they happen. Because UFC is pretty good at giving the fights that people want to see, though. You know, these fights tend to happen if enough people want them.
Yeah, that's true. Strawweight division is, there is a lot of tough girls. I think the top 15 is good. You can see if someone there is not good. Because I think I saw in another weight class, the girls was someone is really good, another one is another level, but in strawweight division, no.
Yeah.
You see everybody's like almost. It's good.
Who's a harder fight to figure out? Is Michelle with the karate, or is it maybe Carla with a wrestling pedigree? And who's kind of a bigger puzzle?
I think for me, everyone has a big point. Like, I don't know, Carla, I need to be careful for her takedowns. Michelle, I need to be careful for kicks because she kicks a lot. So I think in every fight, I need to be scared for one thing. Not a lot of things. So I don't know which one is worse for me, because if I fight against Carla, this will be good. Bad.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot there. We're looking forward to this fight with Marina, though. And I do want to see that stand-up battle. But any way it goes, I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Boom! She will throw elbow. Boom! I have to.
Yeah. So have you worked a lot of clinch? Have you been at work in? I mean, you have a judo background, so did you find the clinch easy to learn?
Muay Thai.
Yeah.
It's because I did that a lot in my gym, and my gym was there was girls who was from Muay Thai too, in America Top Team 2, there was the girls from Muay Thai from Holland. Yeah, Holland. So I trained it hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Dutch Holland, the Dutch Muay Thai is very, very bit leg kicks galore.
Kickboxing too.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome.
Yeah, it's good talking to you, Amanda. I'm happy that you're fighting. It's an incredible card, and you know, everyone is happy. Everyone is psyched to see you fighting again. So, congrats on getting on the card, and we'll hopefully talk to you after.
Oh, congrats. Thank you. I really appreciate that because, you know what, I like to talk, but just a second. In the beginning, before I did my first fight in the UFC, my debut fight, I was talking to my dad. Hey, Dad, how will you sell the fight? Because this is hard, man. I don't know how to do trash talk. I don't do a lot of sexy pictures. So how will you sell the fight? And we was thinking it and figured out nothing. And then the people liked my voice, liked my I don't know what I talk. It's good, Dad. And when you guys say that it's good to do interview with me, I appreciate, really. Thank you.
Yeah, I would so much rather you be real than come up with some corny trash talk to say. Because when it naturally happens, like, you know, Daniel Cormier is not a trash talker, but when him and John went at it that was hilarious. It may happen someday. And if it happens naturally, that's the best.
That's true.
And people just like you because you're nice and you're 10-1. I mean, you know, obviously, I mean, you're kicking everybody's ass too. That's another reason people enjoy watching you. You're
winning,
and you're beating good people. I mean, you know, Marcos Dern, Vance. I mean, so you're actually, you know, people like watching you because your fights are really good too. So trash talk is great, but you don't need it for people who want to see you fight.
Yeah, like look at Max Holloway and Frankie Edgar, nicest guys in the world. Everybody loves them. So yeah, just be you. We like you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's good.
All right, Amanda. Good luck on Saturday, and I'm sure we'll talk to you after. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Ciao, great talking
to you. Bye. All right, take care.
Ah, ciao.
Today's episode is brought to you by Devour, the official frozen meal of the UFC. They put big flavor first with premium meats, creamy sauces, and gooey cheeses. How good does this sound, Matt? Check out their buffalo chicken mac and cheese the next time you're in the freezer aisle. It's smothered in a spicy buffalo cheddar cheese sauce that'll knock your socks off. Or how about their loaded potatoes with Angus beef and bacon? God, that sounds good. It's, you guessed it, loaded with crispy bacon and delicious hunks of Angus beef. It sounds so good. Whatever you choose, Devour Meals is the new favorite frozen meal.
I love Devour, Jimmy, and I'm gonna get nuts with the meals, Jimmy.
Devour Meals, the official frozen meal of the UFC. This episode of UFC Unfiltered is brought to you by P3, the official protein snack of the UFC. P3 portable protein packs are a savory and crunchy combination of three dynamic sources of protein from meat, cheese, and nuts. Each P3 pack contains up to 13 grams of protein, and they come in great tasting combinations like turkey, almond, and Colby Jack. P3, three dynamic ways to fuel your day with protein packed meat, cheese, and nuts, because three is better than one. Can you hear us, sir?
Yes, no, I can hear you, yeah.
Okay, great. So I always feel like whenever we've watched fighters connecting and sometimes they don't realize they're on camera. So I always feel like I'm spying on somebody. So, all right. happy that you're here. So Phoenix was just mentioning when you came in, Phoenix was mentioning to me, one of the reasons you started fighting was because I think you were 14 and you were overweight. And
yes.
were you built stocky or were you just eating terribly or what was going on?
To be honest, I think I was eating terribly. I was young. I was eating everything what was on the table, and never moved, you know. And then I got very big. That's it. That's the story.
And your dad said, "Hey, this will be good for you."
Yeah, my mom and dad, they actually tried a few things. They sent me to soccer, and in the soccer team, they just used me as a goalkeeper, so I didn't lose weight, you know. And
yeah, they want you to be bigger, right? So you can block the ball.
Just block the ball.
And I was a very bad goalkeeper, and then I changed the sport. I tried to The only thing what start losing where I start losing weight was kickboxing AMA, and then I stick to it.
Did you like soccer? Like, because I typically hate running around. Like, did you like the idea of exercise once you started it, or did you have to find something that you loved before you liked it? And fighting is what you took to.
No, to be honest, the first day of my training, I loved it. I felt in love with it. You know, the obsession. I felt a big passion, and the rest is history. You know, I stick to it, and then I had like my summer holidays, like six months of holidays, and I was training like 2 times a day. I lost a lot of weight during that time, and a lot of guys who went for vacation, like my training partners, they came back after 6 months or 3 months. They came back, I lost already like 40 pounds, and they were all surprised.
Wow. Is food a hard one for you? Because for some guys, they're okay eating healthy. I find it very difficult just as a person. Is it hard for you to lay off the bad stuff, or are you good at being disciplined?
Right now, I don't care. I don't even care, you know. I just want to hit the scale, make weight. And at that point, like, food is not very important. Like, the temptation of food is not as big as the temptation for winning or for success, you know. So it's not very hard anymore.
Yeah. Do you have one of those? It's funny. I think Cormier is the first guy I heard talk about it. Those portable saunas that guys use. Do you have one of those where they're in the room and you're just kind of, it's like you're sitting with this, like, I guess.
Yeah, it's very good. UFC gets us, like, for my last fight, I fought in Vegas during the pandemic, and everybody had their own workout room, and everybody got their own portable sauna. It's a very good thing.
It actually did help.
Yeah, it helps. Yeah.
So are you used to the ritual now of traveling overseas now in the pandemic and the whole, you know, getting tested and the, you know, quarantine and all that? You've kind of just kind of you're into that system and you're kind of comfortable doing it that way at this point.
Yeah, right now I'm very comfortable with it because my friends, they set up a very good training camp. Azai Tabras, they set up a very good training camp in Morocco. We had everything what you need. We brought in guys and we had a great training camp. So for us, it didn't make a big difference.
Ross is like a genius. He really is good at not just figuring out your opponents, but sort of scheduling your training program. Can you talk a little bit about like how Faraz takes you through a training camp?
I swear, Faraz is the definition of a genius. This guy is crazy. Like, he reads thousands of books. He's listening 24/7 to this audio books. This guy is so smart. He just loves knowledge, you know. And every time I ask him, he has a good answer. Sometimes I ask him like 2-3 times, like after in this position, what can I do? And if he tries to block this, he always have an answer, you know. So I feel very comfortable with him. And I'm a guy like I like to train as much as my body breaks down, you know. And he's like, hey, Nasser, we need to schedule like this, or the weight cut, or your weight. He knows everything. Like, he's not just a coach who knows about kickboxing or just about jiu-jitsu. Every time I have a question, doesn't matter, weight cut, recovery, he always knows how to schedule my training. And I feel very, very good since I'm with him. And yeah, he's amazing.
And can you talk about the emotion? You said something interesting about after the Dober fight, about you felt that was, you were immature there, or the emotion had affected you somehow. How had it helped you, and how did it hurt you in that fight?
Usually I'm a very calm and collected guy when I fight. I like to read my opponents, take my time, you know, adjust, adapt, and just read him, read his movements, read his length, strength, power, speed, and everything. And in a Dober fight, I didn't even talk about, like, read him. Before, the game plan was simple, you know. The game plan was to 2.5 minutes, check him out, block everything, because, you know, Dober is a power puncher, make him a little bit tired, and over time, during the fight, take over, you know. And I just went in. The game plan I had in my head just until I entered the cage, and then I was like, I want to kill him. I don't know why. Like, maybe I want to make a big statement. I want to knock him out, and I tried to knock him out. I was swinging wide. It's not my style, you know. It's not my real skill set. And I took a lot of lessons from this fight. And in my last fight, I tried to avoid these mistakes, you know. I think I matured during this 1 year, and this one fight with Dober. I think I improved a lot also, like, mindset-wise, you know. Because I didn't get to show my real skill sets against Dober. That's why I was very mad, you know. But it's my own fault. If your emotions take over during a fight, it's the worst thing what can happen to you.
Was it because you were, and again, I don't know what you said, you wanted to kill him. So I'm just, was it because I think you were favored in that fight? Were you not expecting to be favored? And when they favored you, you wanted to prove something? Or was there something about him personally? Or do you
not
know what it was?
Of this. not because of this. I don't know. Maybe because it was the first time in Vegas. But usually I'm a guy not very impressed by, oh, he's a favorite. He's not against Thibaut Gauthier. I was a minus 1,000 favorite. But I don't care about favorite because against Diakite, I was underdog. You know, I beat him every round. I dominated him. It's not about this. I don't know. I think I just needed to make this experience on this day. You know, early in my career, I did it. I took my lessons and I learned from it.
What have been some of the biggest lessons you've learned in your fight career that you're really utilizing for this fight?
My biggest lesson, I think, just be cold-blooded, you know, patience, and don't rush things. I think that's the key, you know, because I do all my hard work. I cannot do more than this. Like, I never skip training. I never cheat on my training. I never avoid sparring. I do everything what's in my power, you know. And if you know what that you didn't left any stone unturned, you know, that you are very, you have the best coaches. I did everything what's in my human power possible. You know, I have a lot of confidence. Now I just need to don't rush, not be emotional, and just the fight, just be cold-blooded, you know. And then I have 15 minutes. I have 15 minutes to either knock him out, submit him, or win by points. And that's the goal.
How much training did you get in
with happening? Go ahead, Jim.
Sorry. I was saying, how much training did you get in with Usman? And how was that compared to a normal day of training? And how did that come about? Was he somebody that you had wanted to train with before?
Actually, we're both managed by Ali, and we were in Vegas with the team. And at the same time, Ali Abdelaziz, our manager, he hooked up like a 2 weeks training camp for us there before we went to Morocco. He brought in Usman, Gaethje, Cejudo was showing us a little bit of wrestling. And it was great training, you know. Kamaru Usman is mindset. He's a 170 champion. And he's an amazing guy, you know. I took a lot of lessons. He's a great, great fighter and a great person, and I enjoyed every minute of sparring with him.
And what are you expecting out of Sarukian on Saturday?
Obviously, he's a wrestler, you know. Everybody knows he's a wrestler, but you never know. Sometimes maybe his striking improved during the last 6 months a lot. He worked maybe on a lot on the striking, so I don't try to get too confident in his wrestling. We never know, you know. I just get in. And imagine as the best version of him possible, the best opponent I ever faced, you know, and I'm going to be ready for everything.
Well, it's funny. You can't always tell and you're right about that. Like, you know, I mean, who didn't expect Covington or Usman to wrestle when they fought and the whole fight was standing up? It's crazy how sometimes you think, you know, what someone's going to do and they just don't do it.
Exactly. You never know. Sometimes you think, oh, this guy's a wrestler. Maybe he was working with this very good strike coach like 24/7 on the striking, and he all of a sudden become a kickboxer and you're not ready for it. So we try to cover everything, you know, and so we don't get surprised on fight night.
Are you obsessed with tape? Do you watch a lot of tape? Guys have different views about watching a lot of tape. They become overly prepared and they expect something someone did in another fight, or do you watch none of it?
To be honest, I just need to watch like a few minutes of his tape and then I kind of know how he moves. But my coaching staff, my big brother, Heju and Firas Sahabi, they always break down my opponent like the details of details, you know. So I leave this thing to them.
Freeze you up a little bit.
It's mentally funny with like what we call sibling rivalry, right? There's always that competition between siblings. You guys actually get to spar and work with each other. So how do you kind of keep a cool head when it's your own brother that you're working with?
It's the best thing because he's with me 24/7. He exactly knows everything about me. Like he's also holding the best. He's the best pet work holder I've ever seen. You know, he's amazing, and he always comes up with new ideas. Hey, I watch your opponent. Let's try this, and it's working. And sparring like details. He's coaching me. For example, he says, hey, move this way, throw the right hook, and it's landing, you know, and it's amazing because if he tells you something that's working, also it gives you a lot of confidence. And we're almost the same age. He's 1 year older. So it's like we are almost twins. Like, you know, it's a very, very good relationship, and weight cut, everything. I tell him my weight. He knows everything. Like, it's me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's an amazing sports team.
Yeah. It's very good.
It's one of those things because this particular weekend, there's going to be a lot of eyes on the fight. It's a great card. It's, you know, Conor McGregor and Dustin is the main event. I mean, how do you look at the exposure that you're going to get from this event? Do you just not want to think about it, or do you actually feel like you could utilize it?
To be honest, I'm overthinking. I'm not overthinking. I'm over this. Like when I fought Doba, it was also McGregor, then Cowboy, war, huge T-Mobile Arena. Maybe I was impressed by this, maybe affected my performance, I don't know. But to this time, I don't even care, you know. I don't even care about me. I just see my opponent, you know. It can be in the jungle in Brazil, I don't care. I just have this guy on Saturday night, you know, in the octagon, and that's it. Like, I really, really took these lessons from the Doba fight into my heart, not just in the back of my head, oh yeah, I don't get impressed. I really feel like this. Not, I just talk like this. I really feel like this, you know. So I think... I don't care, you know, 5 people watching 2,000, 20,000, T-Mobile Arena, Etihad Arena, McGregor. I don't care, you know, I just go in, my best performance, focus, and that's it.
Well, you are, and we always say it, I'm sure the fans are sick of me saying it, but you are the main event of the prelims, which is always a fight that they expect to be a great fight because, again, it motivates people to purchase the pay-per-view. So, I mean, there's no secret there. So they obviously have a lot of faith that this is going to be a good fight on a Saturday night. And thank you so much for joining us against Arman Sarukian on Saturday, UFC 257. And I can't wait to see your fight.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Nasrat. Pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, best of luck.
All right,
thank you.
Bye. Cody, it's nice to see you. I don't know if you remember me. I haven't talked to you in a while.
Oh, how have you been? Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year. I'm pretty good, you know, just chilling. Excited to see you back and healthy.
Yeah, me too. It's been a long time, but, you know, you go through those things in life, I guess, and you kind of, you know, either break you or make you stronger. So I definitely feel stronger from this, but man, it's been hard being away for sure.
Was your confidence shaken at any point? And cause that last win for you was so good. I was so happy for you. Were you mentally, was it getting tough for you at a point after being undefeated and having a couple of rough fights?
Yeah, you know what? The mental fortitude to be able to come back after, you know, a 3-fight deficit, be on top of the world champion, started to set in. You know what I mean? I knew that this was not going to be a forever state of mode or living that I was going to be in. But for whatever reason, I had the insanity to remain doing the same shit, same mindset. Always come prepared, always come, you know, physically ready to fight. I think the mental side of it, you know, I was going in there and trying to be maybe something that I wasn't, you know. I don't have to be angry, I have to be, you know, I love fighting. Fighting is a passion for me. I was like really kind of faking the funk for the longest time. And I think that a lot of the reason why my love and passion for the sport was gone. I feel like I was going through the motions. And I don't want to say it was because I was losing. I was prior to that. I kind of just was like, man, it just, oh, got another camp. Now I'm like, got excited for it. So I think that, you know, with those losses, it let me reevaluate where I wanted to do or what I wanted to do in the sport for the next, you know, 5 years, 8 years, however long I have in this career. And it really let me sit back like, man, how bad do you want this? Do you want to keep going out there and fucking embarrassing yourself? Or do you want to go out there and be like, all right, you know, stick to the game plan, fight smart, not just go in there recklessly brawl and like, yeah, you get the punch, you get the punch. I was kind of going into those fights. Like, I remember just being backstage, like having a great camp, you know, and then being just backstage and just being feel like just exhausted. Like I didn't even want to warm up. Didn't want to go through like the pre-fight, you know, shakeout and stuff like that. I just felt off rhythm. Just felt like I didn't want to be there. I don't know why I lost that kind of passion for it, you know. And I feel like I've, at times in my life, or through my career from amateur all the way up to, you know, where I'm at now, I've went into kind of those kind of things, but not on this kind of level for being a world champion to that. So, you know, I'm thankful I had to go out and reinvent myself. Not really reinvent, just kind of, you know, I'm a Ferrari. All I had to do is polish up the wheels and, you know, put a little shiny coat on it. I feel like I was listening to a lot of other people try to infiltrate, you know, my thoughts or my how I was supposed to live my life or what I was supposed to be doing on a day-to-day basis. And I've always done my own thing. And I think that's what made me be very successful, because I've just done my own thing. And whether you like it or you don't, I'm happy with myself. So I feel like a lot of times I was listening to other people that I probably shouldn't have been, but you live and you learn. And then, you know, making the huge, you know, decision to go to Jersey was phenomenal. And the reason I'll bring that up early on in this conversation, I think that it was a new place for me. It was a new kind of new fresh chapter. I got to work with Coach Mark Henry, which I've heard about him for many years. We were cordial every time we saw each other. And that guy doesn't give out compliments. You know what I mean? You have to earn his trust, or not his trust, his respect. And he's old. And that's what I liked about him. You know, I went out there and I worked my ass off. I had new guys coming at me. You know, I was, you know, training hard, you know, like I always do. But you have a certain stigma or thing to live up to. Like, you're a former world champion. Like, you're on a 3-fight skid. Like, what's going on? Like, and for me, I needed that new scenery, I would say. Just kind of like see how bad I wanted. I was away from my, you know, comfort zone. I was out of my own bed. You know, away from my son for the first time, as long as, you know, I think a week before that was the longest I went without seeing him. It's out there for months on end, just, you know, learning the craft from Coach Mark and Ricardo Almeida and Frankie Edgar, Eddie Alvarez. And I was still, you know, coming back here in between with my guys here. So it just worked out really well, how everyone just kind of, you know, we got in a call and just said it straight. This is what I needed to do. And the number one thing that I fell in love with Coach Mark and his coaching and just his approach to the game. Like, he's the most competitive. He's a competitor. He wants to win. Like, he wants to win at all costs. You know, what I fell in love with Coach about was, you know, one thing he did say, like, you know, he wants to win. He's a competitor, but it's his job is to get us, you know, is to get us home to our family, you know. And that's, having a child, I think it kind of changed my whole thinking and just the way I looked at it. You know what I mean? Like, well, obviously I want to be able to provide for my son, but I also want to be there for later on in the years. You see a lot of these guys that have, you know, you just saw that story or that came out with Spencer Fisher, you know, like with the CTE and the head trauma. And we're in a sport that, you know, we might take a lot of damage in the fight that people see, but you don't really see what leads up to the training. You know, we're literally beating the shit out of each other daily. You know what I mean? Sharpening our skills. And that's what you have to get your body ready to go in there, physically fight, you know?
Well, Cody, we started interrupting. We just talked about Max Holloway not sparring. And did that, is when you heard that he hadn't like physically sparred before that, maybe to keep himself fresh, is that something you could ever see yourself doing? Because you're at a point now where you're obviously such a great striker, and you're great in all aspects, so you're not a beginner. Is it one of those things where you could see yourself laying off the sparring or really cutting it down, or are you always going to need it?
That's funny. Me and Chris actually, Holdsworth, he's one of my head MMA coaches and really good friend for quite some time now. We've talked on that. You know, we've actually slowed down a lot of the sparring, and we'll do more fight specific technical sparring, like that. We get our hard rounds in, you know, like at least once a week. Cause I mean, you have to, I feel like you have to. It just makes me, you know, hungry, ready to fight. But in camp, I do that in camp. I brush, you know, some of the rust off outside of camp. I'm not sparring each week. I actually just got back to sparring the last 2 weeks since July was the last time I sparred, obviously because of COVID, and I had, you know, other stuff that popped up from COVID. So I got back to sparring, felt great. I mean, I feel hungry. I think there's a push pull to do inside of sparring. I think a lot of these young fighters, even myself, I think the sport's evolving so much that we're coming out with different things, different ways to train, different ways to get your body ready. We do fight sims. And I've been doing them for quite some time, for years now. It's basically, you know, you have a minute with a pad, your pad coach, and then you have a guy on you trying to choke you out. So you're like, you're in MMA gloves, and it's, and, you know, he comes in, tries to take you down, and you're fighting defense, and then you're going to the ground and pound, and you come back up to the mid. So it's that fight simulation, and we're doing that for 5 rounds. Less stress. You're still taxing the body. You're still getting the heart rate up higher. It's harder than actually sparring because you're fighting 5 guys at one time, you know, a minute here, a minute there, 2 minutes here. You're in bad positions. So we'll do that towards like the end of the camp. And the beginning of the camp, we kind of get the brunt of the sparring. And then we get the technical aspect the last probably month, just to sharpen the skills, let the body kind of reset from that stress that you just put on it for the first 4 weeks or 6 weeks, however long you're doing camps. I would give myself at least a 10-week camp just in case, you know, sometimes the UFC might want to fly you out for a media day, or, you know, you might something get, you know, sick or hurt or something happens. So you might have probably 4 or 5 days in that whole 10-week camp that you might not be able to train the way you train. So you have to give yourself ample amount of time to prepare your body for that and peak. So yeah, definitely we've kind of slowed down sparring. I used to spar so much as a kid, you know, boxing. You know, I was, before I even knew how to wrap my hands, I was sparring with professional fighters, you know, and that's just what it was. You're going to be tough, and you have to learn that, you know, you either have it in or you don't. So I think Max looked great. And And I think you can do that at a point and where he's at in his career. He knows how to fight. He's very skillful. He has his timing, his range. He's, you know, his fight IQ, the way he picks his shots. So I think at a point in your career, you can start easing back on sparring and doing more, you know, simulated fight techniques or conditioning shapes like that. And that's what we've been doing. And I've been feeling great. All last camp, I was in Jersey for a while. And then obviously the pandemic hit and I had a kidney infection in February that landed me in the hospital for 7 days. And that was horrible. Got out of that. I was on antibiotics for a long time. Came back to Ohio after I went to see a kidney specialist. Got a bunch of tests, blood work. Just kept every, you know, 2-3 weeks checking my, you know, kidney levels and see where the levels were at. And it balanced.
Was that fight cut related, Cody? Like what was the correlation? Was it fight cut related or hydration related?
Nothing. I honestly, it came from cellulitis, I guess. That was what was okay. The cause. And it attacked my, attacked my throat, which I had strep throat from it, which I didn't know. But
what is cellulitis? Is that, I don't know what that is.
It's a form of like staph, basically.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't have any cuts, any like infected hair, any like ringworm, anything, nothing. Like I had, my shin was literally like a banana. But I was kicking really hard, like I was sparring. So I just thought I kicked an elbow or a knee, to where it was like 2-3 weeks. I would have to just put like a knee pad, tape a knee pad to my shin, and then put my shin pad on, and then spar. Or even when I grapple, I put 2 knee pads on my shin just because it was like a banana. It was so soft. For the longest time, I just thought I kicked an elbow or kicked a knee. Until finally, I was like out in Jersey, and I go back to that. Like you're at a new camp. You're out of your comfort zone. I didn't want to look like a bitch. So every day after that, you know, I was feeling weak, worn down. Like my body was just like, man, this is fight camp. We're training really hard, you know, to where it was like, after a couple of sessions with Coach Mark, I was like, man, I feel horrible. He's like, man, you look great. Coach is very optimistic. He tells you how it is. If you look like shit, he's going to tell you look like shit. You know, it's black and white with him. No gray area. And after one session, I had the shin issue. And I started feeling just really like out of, it's kind of loss of appetite, energy. I was like, man, just kind of feel like I was fading when I was driving to, and I had to go to Ricardo's after I trained him at 7 a.m. and then go to Ricardo's for jiu-jitsu. And I was like, I called Ricardo's. I mean, I'm not feeling good. So I ended up going home and kind of like, wasn't feeling the best, kind of like out of body, almost like a lost appetite, energy. And then my glands were like super swollen and both of my lymphoids in my groin. Wow. They're like 50 centimeter sizes. So I was like, man, that doesn't feel right. It was super sore to walk, touch. So I was like, I'm going to go to the hospital and get these checked out. Went to the hospital, got in there, was in there forever, got strep throat tests. I did the urine, you know, samples, blood tests. And 3 hours later, this doctor came in. It's like, oh, here's a list of surgeons. You're gonna have to get your lymphoids removed. I'm like, that's it? Like, I was like, I know my body. There's something going on. I'm like, they're like, yeah, just, you know, call. This was on a Friday or Saturday, one of the, and I had Holdsworth coming in to train with me for the week, and I was like, all right. I said, okay, well, that's fine. Like, they gave me an IV, and I kind of felt okay, kind of better. This is the second time I was in the hospital, because I went to the hospital when I was in Ohio about 13, 14 days before that. Same thing. Like, oh, it was just just gave me an IV, a little bit of antibiotics, put me on antibiotics for 10 days. And about 2-3 weeks later, it came back. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm like, I kind of told him that, the rundown. I'm like, oh, you need to get your lymphoids removed. Okay, so, and I'm going home, drove home. It was like 20-minute drive. I felt worse. I felt the same. I thought I was gonna crash making it to the house. So I get there and I'm like, oh man, this is horrible. This is not, something's wrong. But I just went to the hospital, saw surgeons, doctors, you know, infectious disease doctor. Everything's fine. Like, I got, you checked out good, you know. I'm, you know, and that's when COVID was going on, so they didn't want to really admit me or do anything. And it was a hot place in Jersey, you know, where it hit in the beginning. So I go home, I'm just not feeling horrible. And I'm not even home for an hour and I start pissing blood. And I was like, oh man. So I was like, yeah, just literally straight blood. And I was like, wow, this is not good. I'm like, well, I can sleep it off. You know, hopefully I can sleep it off. I'll wake up better. Like this, I just went and got checked. Everything's fine. As the night progressed, I just felt worse and worse and worse until It was probably like 8 a.m. I ended up having to like crawl down the stairs and like crawl, like I couldn't drive. I got an Uber, went back to the hospital, and the same lady, the reception was at the front desk, and she's like, "Oh, what were you doing back?" I'm like, "Like I know there's something wrong with me, you know." She's like, "Oh, you don't look so good." I was like, "White," she said, and then they admitted me, put me into like a quarantine room for all these. I got all these tests done, and I'm having my levels of my kidney were just so like high, super high. They were asking like, you know, like all these kind of questions. That every 2 hours I had, you know, doctors coming in and surgeons and infectious disease doctors doing blood cultures. Like I did probably 20 or 25, lab draws. I was in there hooked up to penicillin IV for 7 days. Couldn't move. Like,
were you freaking out? How are you dealing with this emotionally, spiritually, knowing your body's your career? Like, I don't know how I would have such anxiety.
You know what? I was upset because I didn't want to have to pull out of the fight. Because I knew I just needed, my soul needed to get inside the octagon. I needed to get in there and just fight. Because it was so long, like we talked about earlier on the podcast, that going on that 3-fight skid, I'm like, I just need to get inside the octagon. Just open the doors, let me in that cage. You know, let me in the octagon, and then everything else will fall into place. Like, just let me get there. And I told Mark that, Coach Mark, you know, my mother, you know, my coaches out here, Ali. He's like, "Oh, what's going on?" I'm like, "I'm in the hospital, man. Like, I'm gonna have to pull out of this fight. Like, let's. I don't know how serious this is." And we didn't know. The doctors didn't know. I had a team full of doctors in Jersey that were trying to figure this out, what was going on, and ended up, you know, being, you know, cellulitis infection that attacked, you know, got really bad, took over my body basically. And so the whole time I was like, yeah, I just need to get in there. So, I mean, that sucked because I know how hard I worked, you know, to get to this point. It was February. So I was like maybe less than a month out from the fight. And then I was in the hospital, but then the COVID, you know, the pandemic happened. So they canceled the fight, called off the events. I was like, all right. So I was able to kind of have like a breath of fresh air, like, okay, I can get my health corrected. We'll figure out, you know, what's going on. So I ended up going from Jersey to Ohio. I went to the Cleveland Clinic and met with a kidney doctor at the Cleveland Clinic. Wanted to do a couple procedures to see that I'm more invasive. They go in and cut the kidney and check it. So we did our blood work. He's like, "Hey, go back to California," you know, because I was out here in the pandemic. We didn't know if the country was shutting down, the flights were shutting out. I was already removed from my family for nearly 3 months. So I wanted to go back. I was missing my son a lot. So we'll find a doctor out there. And I flew back. I think I stayed in Ohio for 2 weeks just to make sure, because I was so weak. It was hard to even like walk, eat. I lost probably 13 pounds. It was bad. Yeah, I was like, it was horrible, to say the least. Flew back, started feeling better. I remember hitting Dana up and seeing that, saw like a press release that he's gonna, you know, look and hold fights. I'm like, hey, like I hit him up, like, you know, him, Sean, Nick, Ali, Dana, all, you know, the UFC guys. I was like, well, when can I fight? When can I, you know, and they're like, get yourself healed first, get yourself taken care of. So I went to my doctor, Dr. Jeffrey Hill, phenomenal doctor. He's been working on me for a few years. He does a variety of things, sometimes injections or, you know, stem cells, things like that. So he's like, you know, we're gonna find this for you. Found this an infectious disease doctor for me out there. I had to go and do blood cultures again to find what antibiotics. I've been on antibiotics now for, you know, this is 3 months. 3 months till I see this doctor. And he's like, you were on 6 different antibiotics and they didn't treat the one, they didn't test you for the one that you needed to kill this infection. So I had to go back and do a blood culture, you know, and do all that. I felt good, started training again. I started training in my business partner's house. He had a gym garage, everything was shut down. I'm like, dude, like I started to get back in shape. Like I'm not losing everything that I just built for the past 4 or 5 months. Like I'm like, you know, give me a month to build back up and I'll be good. And I hit my strength and conditioning coach up, Amadeo Novella. And he was like, you know, there's a park by my house and had a really nice hill. We started doing hill sprints and footwork. So we were just doing that for about a month and a half. And I finally, you know, was talking to Dan. He's like, hey, we're going to make it happen. You know, we'll make it happen. And I kept asking Sean. That was first, they fought in Florida. And then like, we're trying to figure it out where the fights locations will be, looking at June. I'm like, okay, June. So I got some of my guys that are in the UFC. I'm like, look, we have opportunity to still work and fight and train and proceed on with our life during this pandemic. If you guys want, let's get a small core group of guys in the gym. You don't feel good, we'll check our temperatures. You know, if you're feeling sick, you stay away. You don't, you know, and we did that. We had Emmett, we had Elkins, we had Feely, Song. There's some other guys that were like on the cuffs of making it to the UFC that would come and give us good sparring rounds. And then I would work individually with my coaches. So we did that camp. And about probably 15 days before I was fighting the Sun Sal rescheduled for June 6th, the infection came back. I couldn't walk on my foot. My glands were so swollen. And I was like, oh my gosh, I called my doctor. I'm like, doc, this is back. So I go do a blood culture in both arms. Then I end up having to go to a fusion center for 10 days straight. This is 20 days before, about 15, 20 days before I fought Sun Sal. I had to go to a fusion center for 10 days straight and get hooked up to an IV and let the antibiotic drip into me for 10 days. And then I was on the antibiotic for another five. So that's 15 days of antibiotic lead up to the fight, cutting the weight, beating my body up. And I'm just like, I just got to get inside this octagon. And I know
wait, Cody, did it reinfect you? Did you get reinfected or had it, was it just kind of lurking in there and they had never totally gotten rid of it?
Just never got rid of it. The people and I had doctors and surgeons and infectious disease doctors. And I was there for 7 days in the hospital doing labs and tests. They did not find it. My doctor found it, and my doctor Jeffrey Hill and the infectious disease doctor I work with out here found it in 2 days. What I needed to do, I had to go get an echo of my heart. I had to get a scan. I have a plate in my hand from breaking it. Echo of my heart, you know, sometimes it, you know, the infections will hide in the valves of the heart or like old hardware, like, blood blisters, you know, my feet were all, we trained barefoot. So, I mean, we're always getting, you know, our feet tore up, you know, so I had to, you know, it came back, it came back from my feet somehow. Like, so I had to wear shoes the rest of the camp. You know, that's annoying in itself just to wear shoes and grapple and do all that bullshit. So I went back to that, fusion center for 10 days. And I was like, I just need to get in there and fight. So the infection cleared up, felt fine. You know, didn't feel like it affected me too much. You know what I mean? I was at that mental state of just getting inside that octagon for performance. And I'm thankful for what I had to go through just to get there, because I feel like anything in my camp, like my past camps, anything's easy, it's not worth it. Like something's wrong. Something's going to happen. Like shouldn't happen. So it's more of that. Right, how bad do you want this? You know, how bad do you want to pick yourself up from really the bottom of the mountain when you're on the top to get back to the top? And, you know, Sun Sal was a great opponent for me. Finally got in there. Everything was great. The walk out to the cage, you know, obviously it was different. There's no audience. It was a little, you know, different, but I grew up fighting and, you know, anywhere, anywhere, you know, so it was nothing to me. I'm like, oh, it kind of felt old school. It was like, you know, like we're coming from a small town in New Yorkville, Ohio. And, I remember we have some rival schools that are kind of pretty close to us, literally just over a hill. So we'd wrestle or play football. And that week, you know, you would get, you know, see them at the mall or something. You'd be like, all right, we're going to meet at this place. You know, they have a couple of their friends. You'd have a couple of your friends. You go meet up and you fight. That's what it kind of felt like. It was like old school, like an old school, like schoolyard fight kind of. Like,
yeah.
They got their friend. And it was cool. Like, I don't know. It was just like, it took me back to being like a teenager, like, you know, the fight like that. So I don't know. I was nervous, man. I was like, I was super nervous. Like, walking out to the octagon, I haven't had those feelings for so long. And I was like, holy shit, man, like I'm fucking scared, like scared, nervous, anxious, not knowing what's going to happen there, knowing that you trained your ass off to get here, but you're still in a fist fight and you're one punch away. That opponent lands one punch on you, can go totally throw you off. You'd be an autopilot the rest of the fight. So you have to just, you know, stay on your P's and Q's, but it just felt so good being in there. I remember the first, you know, stepping on the octagon and getting the reads and, you know, and just, you know, just seeing everything. I'm just happy to be back. Then obviously, you know, I got infected with COVID. I went right back to the gym on Monday after the win with Sun Sal. I think that what happened was I didn't let my body give enough rest, let it recover my immune system after, you know, before Christmas in 2019, I was training all the way up to, I went out and helped Frankie out in Jersey in July. You know, he had to return a favor for him. He was always there for me, sparring and the guys out there. And I was back in the gym Monday. I was like, man, this is the first time I haven't been hurt in a fight since Takeya Mizugaki. You know, Cruz, I tore my knee in. You know, so at each fight, I was like, man, I had a long layoff. I had like nine, I had to do stem cell procedures. It takes 8 to 9 weeks to heal. Some ligaments torn in my forearm and my wrist and my hand. So I'm like, yeah, this feels great. Just went back, you know, let's grind. Let's go. It's going to be a big year. And then obviously got infected with COVID really, really bad.
Cody, were you really sick? Like, because, again, people have different they have different reactions to it. Some guys are a little asymptomatic. And I wanted to ask you about the mental fog that comes with that, too. Like how bad was that? Because some people are affected by it and some don't. And how long after did you feel it? And kind of how did that affect you?
Yeah, the mental fog was pretty, it just felt like I wasn't myself. You know, I should be on top of the world. I mean, I got a beautiful young son, just coming off a big win, you know, was getting ready to fight for a world title. You know, that was just announced. I was very excited for that, that challenge that presented itself, you know, to get back into a heavy camp. The mental fog was tough. The first symptom that I had, which I didn't know was a symptom of COVID, was vertigo. I was so messed up with vertigo. And I had vertigo in the past, positional vertigo, like 8 years ago. So I thought I just came back, the crystal came out of the ear, had my equilibrium and balance turned off. And for a long time, it was probably about a month, I was training like this to where it was like getting progressively worse. I was going MMA. I had to stop sparring. Eventually, I had to stop doing grappling because I was like, it'd be fine for the first two rounds and like three, four, five. I would literally just be sitting there spinning. So I'd be holding someone's back or just being in a position where I wasn't getting choked out and just like having my eyes closed, like just riding this roller coaster, like waiting for this ride to stop. And I had to stop doing jiu-jitsu and basically all MMA. I could do strength conditioning, which I couldn't even lay on my back to lift. I had to like modify that with my strength coach, which is great with working around and stuff. I got into cycling pretty heavily. That was probably my saving grace right there to keep me in really good shape. I was riding, you know, like crazy almost every day with my buddy Vince Murdoch. He got me into it. He got into riding because he had to have a surgery on his brain. So they said cardio would be the best thing for him, you know, to keep him healthy, keep him alive, basically. So we started cycling a lot. And the whole time where I had COVID, I didn't know. I'm like, man, cycling's hard as shit. Like, I'm hurt. Like, you know, my lungs were messed up. But I didn't know I had all this because we were training outside. We had those fires. Our air index quality was like horrible. You know what I mean? So we would try to ride early in the morning, like 5-6 in the morning. So it wasn't as bad when it rolled back in, it would get to like 300-400 index. So I didn't know I had all these symptoms, you know, like as far as that, like that. And I remember like feeling super fatigued, like just, you know, telling Danny, I was like, I just don't feel good. You know, like I just don't feel like myself. Like, I'm sorry if I'm kind of, you know, not acting like myself. I don't feel like myself. And some days would be okay. I'm like, oh, I feel pretty good. And I'll go work out and then come home and I'm like, I'm dead. Like I have to literally, I'm, you know, nap or fall asleep. And I'm talking about a nap. I'm talking like a 4-hour nap, like wake up and just feel horrible. So I have to cancel my next session. And I did that probably for a week. And I was like, guys, I'm just going to kind of lay off and see what's up. Then I went to, this is probably a month that I was doing this. I went down to Tyson's Ranch. We had Smart Cups were sponsored by them. They're the first printed beverage plant-based cup. And so we went down there. We had to do a bunch of videos and photo shoots, you know, for our sponsorship with them, our partnership with them. And we all had to get COVID tests because Mike was in camp. He had his fight with Roy coming up. And I got tested and was COVID positive. And that's probably the best that I felt. Like, I didn't have the vertigo that night. Like every night I was having vertigo. I couldn't sleep. Like literally I would toss and turn and just feel like the drunk spins.
Were you sleeping sitting up? Did that help at all if you try to sleep sitting up when that happened?
Yeah. Actually, it was if I slept on my left side, I was good. But if I like rolled over, I was like vomiting. Like I would like literally I would sleep with the bucket there because I would physically get so sick. Then I had that. So I did a whole quarantine. I was probably quarantined for about 20 days. And then I was like, all right, you know, but the whole time I was just doing my own training. I was out on the bike, you know, I was out, there's no one. I was just riding the bike a lot and came back to the first day I hit pads with my coach, Michael Malott. And my arm kind of felt a little weird. And I was like, oh man, it's kind of a little tight. I was like, oh, maybe just my arms always are tight just cause you know, hitting just the pads super hard. I was in really good shape. So I really didn't miss a beat. And I wake up like 2-3 in the morning, I excruciating pain. And I was like, oh, my brother was out here. I was like, hey man, like something's wrong with my arm. And my, like down by my elbow, it was like probably like this much, like expanded out. And I was like, oh man, I was looking up like, man, looks like I blew my bicep out or something. So I went to my doctor the next day and I was like, hey, I don't think I can go to MMA practice. Do you have time to see me? I just need you to check this out. I got hill sprints at 2. I can come right before. And I got like hit it off my side. I was like, I couldn't even like post my arm. My whole vein was like an electrical cord all the way up to my wrist. And I was like, damn, something's wrong. I was like, I just know something's wrong. So I went there and he ultrasounded it and he misdiagnosed it. He thought it was a torn bicep, you know, a distal bicep tear. So I was like, all right. He's like, you know, we're going to go get an MRI. I wasn't able to get the MRI until like Friday. It was like 3 days. And I finally went and got the MRI. And they're like, oh, nothing's torn. I'm like, oh, well, that's great. I said, what's going on? She said, but we are getting you into an urgent ultrasound. And they ultrasounded my vein from my, you know, basically my neck all the way down to my wrist. And I tore my whole vein, ripped it in half. Had three blood clots in my arm. And they were like, dude, we need you to send me right to the hospital. I was actually at the Marshall Hospital here in Placerville. They rushed me over and like to the next hospital. Shot me with blood thinners in my thighs like for the next 3 days. Like, we need to get if this breaks off and goes in your lungs, you can die. I didn't know how serious it was. Like, obviously, blood clots are the number one, you know, world's number one silent killer, you know, because you don't know you have them. I didn't know I had them, I just thought it hurt. So, I've been on blood thinners ever since I tore my vein, you know, so I wasn't able to fight for the, you know, the flyweight title.
Right.
I'm finally starting to feel better. It was probably about a month ago. I started feeling better about a month.
Had a rough year, man. Wow.
It's been a rough year. I honestly have, but I feel like this, everything I went through mentally has got me ready for the next, you know, leg of my career. You know, I feel like, yeah.
How so? Like, would it, I mean, when you go through something where your health is in just such tremendous risk and you don't feel 100%, you must have gone through a million things in your mind. You know, how is this prepping you for the future?
Just never give up. I mean, it could be worse. I could, you know, a lot of people are dying from this, you know, losing loved ones. You know, I just gotta, you know, sit back and just think that this is just gonna be a little downtime of my life where my health isn't as strong as it should be. I gotta focus on that. Learned a lot about my body this last year. When to push, when to pull. So I think that's going to help out, you know, looking at that, like help out for the longevity of my career moving forward. You know, I'm not the 22-year-old kid that can, you know, those kids are gangster, man, but it comes at a cost. You know, now, you know, you evolve, your body changes every 5 years, they say. So you have to adapt and, you know, make your body, you know, different. So I'm just training different, you know, still training just as hard. Doing different things, more working on mobility, you know, nutrition factor. I'm with Orgain and Trifecta, and they have been great with just helping me, getting me in the hands of, you know, nutritionists and supplemental advice that will help me out, you know, like I said, to have longevity, because that's what we want. You know, we don't want, it's going to be a hard day to be able to have to walk away from fighting. You know, it's gonna be horrible. I mean, you just are done.
Within that whole time, you're sitting back, you're watching the division, you're seeing what's going on, you're taking a look at these matchups. You know, what were your thoughts? Like, when I come back, this is what I want to do. This is who I want to go after. Because I know that you're known to have a hit list.
Yes. Yeah. Watching the fights, man, it was tough. You know, but there's a time in my life that I didn't even want to watch the fights. But this time I was watching the fights. You know, all the UFC is on. Oh, okay, I don't really care. Now, like, I'm tuning in, I'm watching. I'm a student of the game again. I feel like I'm more obsessed with this sport and evolving and becoming the best fighter that I can be, you know, and doing – I have high goals, you know. I have really lofty goals in this sport. And I feel like you always have to be evolving. You know, the sport's growing so much. It's crazy. And it's awesome. You know, look at where it's at. You know, it was on ABC last week. It's awesome. You know, there's a huge – bigger views and just everything that can come with it, you know, and you're one or two wins away from, you know, being able to change your life more and more. You know, you've seen that with a lot of fighters. You know, they win a few fights, win the title shot, and next thing you know, they're on this, on that. And obviously money was never my motivating factor, you know. Being the best was, you know, I said I was going to be the best before I even knew what all entitled into being an MMA. I just boxed and wrestled. I didn't know about jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai and all this other shit. I just wanted to be the best at it.
I'll ask you this. And this is a very competitive question, but this weekend, Max Holloway was said to be considered the best boxer in MMA at the current time based off of that performance. Would you agree, disagree, or what do you think about him being called the best boxer in MMA?
I mean, that's, hey, he's got a lot of stuff that can back that up, you know, significant strikes landed. I like Max. I think Max is that performance right there was one that was he needed, you know, coming after, you know, two losses to Volkanovski, which I think the last one was very, very close. I think that Max won that fight. But that just, you know, is a statement of how good he is. Who can have the best boxer, you know. I'm looking to be the best in the world, you know. We're going to be the world champion. So they can have those boxing. I think he can get that. He's a great southpaw. He picks his shots really well. But what impressed me so much, a lot of the whole fight, I watched clips of it, but I have to look back and study on it, is that Cater is so tough. Cater, his boxing is really good. His boxing, the way pop shots moves out, it's just like what we go back and saying, one shot, you know, that first round, man, Max kind of put it on. That can just really throw you off, and Cater's as tough as they come. But that, I don't think a lot of people know how tough, like, Cater is so tough. His skill level is so high. His boxing and Max went out there. And so, yeah, I would, you know, give him the best boxer in the UFC. Definitely significant strikes, and he's doing it right, man. He's doing it right. I'm excited for him and his next fight and whoever they give him.
Well, Cody, you sound great. We have to wrap up our show. We appreciate very much you coming on. It's always good talking to you, man. You're always so open. It's just an open book about what's going on. And no matter who you fight, I'm guessing Figueiredo Moreno might be next for Figueiredo, but Jose or whoever they put you against, we're really, really happy you're back.
That's the fight. That's the fight. Yeah. Look, I have the title shot at flyweight. Obviously, things happen. I was out of my control. I was supposed to fight him. He got two replacements already. Okay. I'm not going to sit and wait. They're going to fight in April. That's 8 months. I'm not that dude. An inactive fighter, that's how you kill your career. You know, Freddie Roach says that the best. Inactive fighter, that's how you kill your career. Okay, I'm going to go. Why should I go? I already have a title shot at 25. Why did I go down and fight a number one contender shot? Jose Aldo, it's a legend. It's a former world champion. Yep. He's at my weight class now. Dude, that's a fight that gets me up. It gets me in wants to just go in there and train and fight a legend. And all due respect to him, but, you know, his time is up and mine is, you know, just getting there. So just a fight that keeps me, you know, and good, sharp training for Figueiredo or whoever wins. I think Figueiredo will win. But Aldo is still as dangerous as they come, you know. It's a legend. I can put that in my cap, move on, go down the flyweight and wait. So that's what my eyes on. So hopefully at the UFC, you know, we talk with Dana, we talk with Sean, Ali's, you know, in communication with them. I think hopefully people can get behind that fight and really want to see that, you know, that main event, you know, prosper.
Absolutely. Cody, thank you so much, man. That's the fight I would love to see as well. And hopefully we'll talk to you right before that fight too. Yeah. It's good to hear you. You sound great, man. And we're happy that you're healthy and you're ready to go.
Yeah. Thank you. Happy New Year's.
Yeah. You too, Cody. Good talking to you, man. We'll talk again. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Bye. Wow. Yeah. What a rough year, man. He's such a good, I love that he goes into this detail about injuries and what's going on. And he gives you everything you want to know.
It's a really crazy. I do hope the Jose Aldo fight happens. Yeah, he has fought a legend in Dominic Cruz, and there's been that beef with Team Alpha Male since like the WEC days, which were super fun. So I think that's a great matchup for him as well.
Thank you, Phoenix, for co-hosting today. And thank you to Nasrat Hackbrest and as well as Amanda Hibas for joining us. And what would you like to plug? Where can people see you?
Just hit me up on social media. I'm there. I've got a lot of new things in the works that I can't talk about, but we'll see when they come up.
All right. Well, it's good talking to you, Phoenix, and I'm sure we'll talk again very soon.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Thanks for joining today. Bye, guys.